WFAE streaming is funded by Garage Door Guru, providing local comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details, go garagedoorguru.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Let me begin by throwing out some big names. Blame Is, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, Peter Pan, Firebird, God of Carnage, Frost Nixon, Kiss of the Spider-Woman, Tosca, War Horse. Those are just some of the events, theatrical, musical, and danceical, that will grace Charlotte area stages in the coming year, and that just skims the surface. In fact, if we spent the next several hours, we could not list every entertainment option scheduled between now and June 2013. That gives you an idea of how far Charlotte has come in the last decade or so. Given this abundance, it has become ever more important to know what's out there that suits your taste or which might broaden your horizon. So we've assembled a group of Charlotte arts writers, to handicap the upcoming season. Lawrence Topman has been writing on the topic in the pages of the Charlotte Observer and the Old Charlotte News for 33 years and sings in the Opera Carolina Chorus. In fact, he will appear in Tosca this month. Would you like to give us a sample?
Ezio Pinza, the great bass, said that before noon he couldn't even spit. I'm a not so great bass, so before 10 a.m. I can barely breathe.
But he will spit.
I completely understand that, particularly the spitting part. Stephen Brown has been a critic and arts reporter at The Observer since 2003 with degrees in music and journalism. He learned by doing and concentrates on Charlotte's music, particularly classical music scene. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I won't make fun of you because I don't know you well enough.
There you go. Doesn't stop some people.
That's right. And Perry Tannenbaum has been covering theater and other arts in the pages of Creative Loafing since its inaugural issue in 1987. He also contributes regularly to American Record Guide. They still make records? Dance International, Jazz Times, and other publications. It is beyond safe to say that he sees every play presented in town every year. In fact, he has to leave right now to catch the next one. Welcome back.
Imagine on, here I come.
Good to see you. I'd like to hear from each of you how you got into doing what you do and why you wanted to do it, why the arts are attractive to you, because a lot of people just don't get it. So I'd like to hear from you guys why. Larry, let's start with you.
Well, in college, I briefly imagined I could be a professional actor, but friends, teachers, and audiences disabused me of this idea. I realized I wasn't good enough to make a living at it, and I thought, well, what could I make a living at that would still be related to the arts? And writing was the only thing open, and the more I did it, the more pleasure I took in it. It's the only subject I've found that is consistently different from day to day. I used to be a sports writer, and I enjoyed it, but all the games started to merge together in my mind. And so for me, the pleasure of being around culture is the reason that I continually want access to it. And the only way I know to have access to it professionally is to write about it.
And is the word culture an impediment for some?
No, I got it out okay.
Okay.
I suppose if you divide it into...
He didn't spit, though.
No, not yet.
That's why we have these little screens on the microphones. I suppose if you divide it into high culture, middle culture, low culture, it starts to become insulting when you assign things to undesirable categories. Right. I don't think there's a need to do that, so I would say no.
Okay. Stephen.
Yes, sir. Well, I sort of came into it backwards in sort of a way. I studied music in college and always sort of thought I'd go into academia, but I decided that didn't look so appealing as I was in graduate school and almost by happenstance had a chance to start doing some freelance reviewing for the Herald in Miami. Mm-hmm. And began to like that and stuck with it. And after all these years of, after a few years of freelancing, I got a full-time job at it and has gone on from there.
So what made it attractive to you in the first place?
Well, I mean, probably it was part of what Larry was talking about in terms of just wanting to be around it. I mean, I was all about music and had sort of been immersed in it for years, and so this was a way of going with that.
Barry, because you are really immersed in it, more than anybody I know.
Well, I was born in New York. My parents met at the Metropolitan Opera. So it was one of those things where I wasn't going to be a doctor or a lawyer. I was pretty much set on a career in writing by the time I got to college. Mm. And I was writing poetry. I was in the Iowa workshop for fiction and poetry. They don't give out weekly checks for that, though. So
they give out week checks, which is not the same thing.
Weekly, yeah, or monthly checks. So I had a good background. I met a lot of great critics at the graduate school, both at Iowa and at South Carolina, where I studied under James Dickey. So when I came up here, I was actually writing advertising for the Lyerly Agency, but a recession hit, as they often do. And what became available was Creative Loafing, opening down the street. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to write about jazz, one of my great passions. But I was quickly told that there ain't no jazz around here. So since I was in Fiddler on the Roof at the time at Rock Hill Little Theater, they had this logical idea that maybe I could write about theater. And
were you Tevye?
I jumped at it.
Let's start with last season. What was the most interesting, important, best, I don't know how you pick a word, thing that you saw last season, memorable, important?
Well, I guess there could be different answers that it's hard to pick just one thing, but one thing that I think may have been especially striking for a lot of people and will be relevant to what we're going to talk about today is back in last winter when Opera Carolina did Madame Butterfly, a very famous opera. Mm-hmm. Everybody's familiar with it, but as a new ingredient to it, they did use sets and costumes and a staging that was designed by a visual artist, Japanese artist Jun Kaneko, which made a big impression. It was much more abstract than you typically would get. You know, there was no little white house for a butterfly to be emerging from. Mm-hmm. And it got lots of different people's attention, people coming to the opera that wouldn't necessarily have done it before, or people opening their eyes in a way that they mightn't have done before, and people that knew the opera seeing it differently than they had before, just because of the effect, you know, dramatic effect of this, you know, very colorful, very bold, somewhat abstract, you know, sets and costumes, projected images sometimes, and in a way that may sort of point the future for them. It partly points the future literally because they're going to do Magic Flute this coming season, Mozart's Magic Flute fairy tale opera, also with sets by the same artist that were just premiered last summer in San Francisco. And so this is going to be the second opera company to perform them, second city to see them. Again, very abstract, very colorful, and in this case with video projections, I think through the entire opera. Wow. You know, on the backdrop, helping, you know, establish the scene and change the scenes, set the atmosphere. And so that'll be another thing, helping, you know, as an attempt to sort of keep the art form, you know, lively and interesting and engaging and right. Bringing in new people to it.
Perry, this is an impossible question for you because, first of all, if I were you, I couldn't remember anything I saw because it would all be a blur. But what's your take on last season?
Well, the real standout was August Osage County at Cast, not only because of the ambition of it, because they also opened this thing with this 3 or 4 story set at a new venue, which is also very exciting, has become like a new hub of theater. Mm-hmm. In the Noda area.
It's down next to Amelie's for those people who have not been down there. Larry.
Well, I would say that the same thing, and the emphasis for me would be on the whole season that they did, having a proper home that they can live in, rehearse in, bring other tenants in, like the dance company Caroline Kalush was working with them there. That's, for me, the most exciting thing, that we opened a real small theater, real comma small, not real small, and that there are 3 stages in there that are adaptable to all sorts of different things. More than any one show, it opens up artistic possibilities, and that, to me, was the most important theatrical event of last season.
Okay. Last time we got together, I believe, we left the Children's Theater till almost the end of the show and kind of left some things on the cutting room floor, and I heard about it. So we're going to start with
that. So nothing on the cutting room floor this time.
Well, there'll be some other things on the cutting room floor, but not the Children's Theater. We'll start with them. They are arguably, I think, the largest, best-funded, most successful company in town. And is that because of how well they're run? Is it because of the quality of their productions? Or is all of that, which is considerable, by the way, is all of that because they receive a large amount of money because in Charlotte, we'll do almost anything for the children?
And then they're out on
their own.
Say
that like it's a bad thing.
Well, it's not a bad thing. It's not. But even some nasty things that we like to that we wouldn't as adults be involved in, if it's for the children, we seem to do it.
Well, one thing I think that frees them up to do is take some chances they ordinarily would not.
Yeah.
This year they're doing a Red Badge of Courage that's a musical set to a hip-hop score. And a theater that was financially marginalized or anxious about whether or not it would have adequate underwriting would never take a risk like that. I mean, if that was what was going to differentiate between profit and loss, you wouldn't do it.
Well, artistically, they're very strong. I mean, they take chances and they do interesting things and twisty things sometimes that you wouldn't expect.
And they're doing a musical that originally premiered in 1991 and has never been seen in Charlotte before, namely The Secret Garden.
Yes, The Secret Garden actually was produced at Belmont Abbey, but it's a wonderful, wonderful show. It's a wonderful musical.
He forgot one.
What?
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's right. it's a show, as you say, it's not well known. It requires really good singers, and even though it's a children's story, it's a fairly adult – it is an adult musical. Will they do the whole thing? Will they do a cut-down version of it, you think?
I'm pretty sure they'll do a cut-down version of it from what I've heard.
I think all the music will be intact. They may trim some of the dialogue. There's about an hour of music in it, and I think they'll keep that and trim it down a little bit.
But it's a show that really they will be able to do very well given their technical abilities over there in their Imagineon theater, because it requires a lot of – it's almost cinematic.
Well, that's the element we didn't mention, but that is pretty obvious, that they have a fabulous facility there with two spaces. And sometimes they use the lobby, so I guess they have actually three spaces for their productions, and each one is technically state-of-the-art.
And they're opening with an old chestnut, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. I saw You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown in 19 – and saw it two or three times in a row at Shady Grove Music Fair in Washington, and just fell in love with this little piece because it's just so cute. But back then, everybody read Peanuts in the newspaper. Back then, everybody had a newspaper to read.
Mm.
Do kids relate to Charlie Brown anymore?
I think that kids would if they were introduced to him. I don't think he'll be familiar to them as a character.
Because they know him, if they know him at all, through television, don't they?
The annual Christmas special, right, and Halloween special, and I believe there's now a Charlie Brown Yom Kippur special. But I think that the kids who see him on stage will feel empathy for him and feel connected to him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely so. That's why he was universal in the 60s. Kids internally, especially young kids, I'm not sure I've changed all that much.
Is this the original version, do you know, or is this the one that they brought back to Broadway recently with, I think, was it Kristen Chenoweth was in it, I think?
Well, there was an off-Broadway version, then there was a Broadway version, then there was a different Broadway version. I believe, I'd have to check this, that this is the slightly altered one that went to Broadway the first time back in the day.
I mean, they're doing a pretty wide and large season, but these two shows that we've talked about, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, and Secret Garden, are shows that can be fully appreciated by adults. And I think a lot of adults steer clear of the children's theater because of the name, the children's theater, and they shouldn't, because a lot of these shows are really highly entertaining for adults.
In terms of the professionalism of the theater, adults are definitely missing the boat if they're not attending shows at children's theater.
Mm-hmm.
Having children along is a great excuse to go.
Well, yeah, but you don't have to. They're starting this season without the guidance of their longtime artistic director, Alan Poindexter, who left the theater earlier this summer. Any way to gauge the impact of his tenure there?
There could be a couple of clunkers because of his non-involvement if he is just totally divorced from it and not directing at all. One doesn't know whether he resigned to do more of that because he hasn't done much acting or directing in recent years as he had previously.
But would you attribute much of their success to his artistic sensibilities in the past?
Oh, absolutely so. The people who are there, who are entrenched there, are pretty much his people.
Okay, we're going to take a little break here and come back with more in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Garage Door Guru, providing local, comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details at gogaragedoorguru.com. And AARP, offering an opportunity to learn more about Medicare and Social Security and to join the conversation about their future. You've earned a say. More information available at earnedasay.org. The national debt, it is enormous and growing by the hour. It's a major topic of political discussion and something we will have to address, I suppose, if the country is to maintain solvency. And recently, North Dakota Senator Kirk Olofsson, he's a state senator there, has proposed a constitutional amendment that would require approval of the individual state legislatures to increase the federal debt. He joins us to talk about the amendment and then a broader discussion of the issue tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, omega-3 fish oil supplements are widely thought to prevent a variety of ailments, including heart disease, Alzheimer's, and depression. Assessing the health benefits of an omega-3-rich diet.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're going through the upcoming season, as much of it as we can cover, the upcoming arts and culture and entertainment scene with Larry Topman and Stephen Brown, both from the Charlotte Observer. Larry concentrates on theater and movies, occasionally movies. And Stephen Brown is a longtime critic and arts reporter and writes a lot about music, particularly classical music. Perry Tannenbaum is a theater critic for Creative Loafing, also writes about jazz and other kinds of music for other publications as well. Opera Carolina is going to be on this program on Thursday to talk about Tosca in depth, and because I know they're bringing in some heavy hitters for the lead.
And they'll and ask them about all the other Puccini they're going to do as well over the coming years.
Okay, of course it is. It really stars Larry Topman. But they also have these two other productions on the calendar, one of which you've already said talked about a little bit, Stephen.
Mozart and Magic Flute, that's right.
And then the Pearl Fishers. I know they've done the Magic Flute
right. And actually
times.
They did the Pearl Fish. It's by Bizet, famous for Carmen. They actually did Pearl Fisher 6 or 8 years ago. It's obviously not as famous as Carmen because nothing is as famous as Carmen, nearly. But it's a beautiful opera itself set in what used to be called Ceylon. It's a love triangle opera with some beautiful and sort of vaguely exotic-tinged music. It's, I guess, sort of what a Frenchman of the late 19th century might have thought music from that part of the country or that part of the world might have sounded like. But there's some beautiful melodies, very famous love duet, not love duet, very famous friendship duet for the tenor and baritone that you'd probably recognize if Larry here were to sing the tune for you.
Oh, if only there were a tenor here.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we'll just pitch it up. You can sing it, and then we'll take a break. We'll come in. We'll pitch it up electronically for you.
That's right.
Speed it up.
That's it.
And so it's not as unknown as we might think around here.
Okay.
But it's their bit of exotica for the present season.
And from the best that you know, is that what they try to do? Did they try to do a couple of very well-known? Because they need to put people in the seats.
All right. And
so
it's
to do the hits.
Right.
I mean, do they try to pick one every year that's not quite as well-known?
To some degree, yeah. It was easier to do that. I was talking about this with somebody from the marketing person in the opera business the other day. It's easier to do that when they had four operas a season. They've cut back to three during the recession. And it's the same experience they have with lots of opera companies of this size or any size, really, is that, as you were saying, you do need to do one or two or three, some, you know, proportion of pretty familiar operas every year, especially nowadays, to keep people coming in and maybe to get new people coming in or certain types of new people that haven't seen these famous operas. On the other hand, you have to try to find some way of keeping the veteran opera people interested, give them something new to experience, and maybe a way to bring in people that might not necessarily be, you know, the stereotypical or perpetual opera lovers, but that might could be made interested if you had the right thing for them. Like a couple of years ago when they did Margaret Garner, you know, the opera based on the story, the novel by Toni Morrison. Mm-hmm. And people were familiar with that, familiar with the novel Beloved. And so that caught the attention of a different group of people that might not ordinarily have come to the opera. And so what opera companies like this try to do is find some way to bring in those as well at the same time as trying to keep the traditionalists happy. And it's a very tricky balance.
Taking this top 40 radio station approach with a very tight rotating playlist of operas.
It's very difficult, that's right.
What are we leaving? What are people not having an opportunity to see that perhaps they should see or would like and maybe even help to broaden the appeal of the form for people who don't go all the time?
Well, there would be lots of different ways to approach it, either from operas that are more theatrically oriented in terms of, you know, the realism or the story, you know, believability rather than sort of the fancifulness of some operas. Mm-hmm. That would be one way, or even sometimes just newer ones with different musical styles. that might
or
speak hybrids, to different groups
like
of people.
Streetcar Named Desire or
something like that. That's right.
It's an election year. They could have done, is it Floyd Collins? Is that the name of the opera that, no, that's not it. What's the one that they did several election cycles ago about a politician?
Carlisle Floyd.
Carlisle Floyd.
Yeah, yeah.
Willie Stark.
Thank you.
Stark,
yes.
Exactly.
That ends with an assassination. I don't know if you really want that during election
right.
year.
Yeah,
I guess it's possible.
Although they did it. They had campaign banners all over the town when they did it.
I bet so. That was before me,
did,
but I bet they did.
The Crucible in the 90s. So,
So I stand corrected. We're having Opera Carolina on the program on Friday to talk about Tosca. But
there will be also down the line of Tosca, which is a very famous Puccini opera, but they're starting into Ashy Butterfly, sort of retroactively started them on a Puccini festival that they're going to do over the next several years. Mm-hmm. They want to do all Puccini's operas.
Yeah.
The idea being partly to do what you were saying a second ago or to address what you were talking about, because there are operas of Puccini's that are standard repertoire in bigger cities, bigger opera companies, mm-hmm. but have never been seen here or haven't been done here in decades. And so they want to bring in some of those as well, hoping that people who are not familiar with these operas but know the name Puccini, know Bohème, know Tosca, they can maybe interested in coming to see these right. and appreciate them and their power and beauty as well. Things like Girl of the Golden West, La Rondine il Trittico, a group of one-act operas. And so that's another way of doing what we were saying.
And, of course, opera companies around the world do what Opera Carolina does. They bring in their leads.
Yep.
There seem to be a stable of lead performers who travel around the world and perform mm-hmm. these same roles over and over again with different stagings and different companies. But then
there's not enough of those people, unfortunately.
Right.
That's one of the problems.
And then there are those people like Larry, who in this town is one of the people who has been in the Opera Carolina chorus for a very long time. What's that experience like? Because you do get to work with some really high-caliber people who come in from all over the world.
Well, it raises the bar because the expectation of the chorus is, of course, not that we'll perform like we're at the Met or at the Lyric in Chicago, but that we will be prepared to meet the professionals on a relatively level playing ground. All of us have other jobs. At least I do until I get back there this morning. We'll see. but, hey, if Alan's gone, who knows what's happening in town? But I think that we are all kind of challenged to do better than we ordinarily might in a lower level quality of production. We did Eugene Onegin last season, and we rehearsed literally, I would say, maybe 30, 40 times just on the music to get it because it was Russian and it was so hard. And I think we could have done less in the old days at Opera Carolina than that and still be thought of as competent. Now competent is not really satisfactory within
the
definition of the country.
And also there's more difficult music sometimes in these less familiar operas, and that puts an additional requirement on the chorus as well.
Mm. But let's not get caught up in the idea that Opera Carolina is either complacent or conventional altogether, because they collaborated with On Cue Productions in their production of Robeson last year, and they're pretty much at the center of this new Ulysses Festival yet to be announced for
That's
the next
right.
year, because they had the best production in it with the Eugene Onegin, which combined the most of the local organizations. So they'll be at the center of that for years to come if they can figure out how to do it.
Well, we'll talk about Tosca more on Friday when Opera Carolina joins us, and two of the lead singers join us as well. Let's move on to theater. Actors Theater has already opened their season with a play that got a lot of buzz on Broadway, God of Carnage, which is a Yasmina Reza play. People may not know her, but they know her work. Probably a lot of people probably have seen Art. She's French, I believe. Had somebody else translate her plays into English with different levels of success. How's this production?
I'm giving it a rave in today's creative loafing. They did, I agree with Larry, take it in a very comical direction as opposed to other productions that I've seen. But it works.
It is a comedy.
It is a comedy, but it's not exactly vaudeville.
Well, no, it's not vaudeville, but
it comes out a little in that more in that direction than you might expect this time around.
Because of the physical nature of it?
It's more later. Physical comedy, yeah.
Okay.
And Reza has said that her shows are not necessarily comedies, that European audiences think of them as being much more serious than we do.
Maybe, yes. Was it your review that I read that in? That
when they're in the original French, especially.
They don't laugh.
French people are much more struck by, wow, this is really like me and like people I know, and that's not good. And that Christopher Hampton, who's translated Art and this play,
right,
and who's known maybe for Dangerous Liaisons is his best translation, best known, has made them more comic for English-speaking audiences. So someone, the play that we saw may not have been exactly like the play someone saw in France originally, even though it...
Well, this appears to be...
It was more, called A Comedy of Manners Without the Manners.
Well, this appears, right, to be more American, too. Art seems to me, art is a conversation about art among three men, a conversation that would probably not occur in the United States.
Well, maybe here in this room right now.
That's exactly right. But here, this play could.
We have four men.
The situation presented by the characters in God of Carnage would happen in this country.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it's more universal.
Yeah. The next show they're going to do at Actors Theater is Red. That's coming along in November. What do you know about that play? I know nothing about it.
It's about the painter Mark Rothko.
Oh, that's right, Rothko. Yes,
at the point of doing a commission for the Four Seasons in New York, in other words, selling out, and his interaction with his assistant in that process.
Well, they should have opened with Art and gone to Red. Art's about a white painting? This is
about a red one. Primary.
And they're bringing actually an actor in from Greensboro who's moved to North Carolina recently, a guy named Rob Kahn, to play Rothko, who none of us has seen, although he will be an opus, I'm told, for Charlotte Shakespeare, which is opening next week. He's new to the area, so sort of an untapped talent.
All right. They're filling out the rest of their season over there on the Stonewall with Winter Wondrettes and The Whipping Man, The Exit Interview, and The Divine Sister in May and June. Any thoughts about any of these?
I consider Divine Sister a must-see.
And what
is
that?
It is absolutely hysterical. I only got some of the references.
Obviously about a nun.
It's sort of like a mishmash of singing nun, Sound of Music, and Agnes of God, if you call it.
Oh, my God. All together in one.
And other stuff that Brantley got in the Times Review that was over my head, namely references to Rosalind Russell's career. So.
Did she ever play a nun?
Actually, more than once.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds to be right in with the brand
Exactly. This is the stuff that we know they do well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one of the reasons I label it a must-see.
And of course, Winter Wondrettes is a return of the Marvelous Wondrettes?
Marvelous Wondrettes that we saw last season.
Last summer. It's replacing Santaland Diaries and some other quirky Christmas things. Is this doomed to become a Christmas classic?
That's what we're all afraid of.
I give props to anybody who doesn't do the three or four obvious Christmas selections, not because they're bad, but because Best Christmas Story Ever Told and Christmas Carol, which have their devotees, can only be done so many times, I think, before you start to say, well, I can't ever see that again.
Yeah, right.
I love Christmas Carol. I must have watched film versions 15 times. But at this point, I just can't absorb it anymore. So I'm grateful that somebody else is shaking it up a little bit.
You're just being
Scrooge.
And
we are saying a temporary goodbye to Tuna Christmas.
Right, yeah. Right. And actually, the Davidson Community Players are doing something called the Farndale Avenue Housing Estate Townswomen's Guild Dramatic Society production of A Christmas Carol. I just said that to see if I could do it in one breath. I don't know what that is, but if I'm going to see A Christmas Carol, that is the way I now want to see it.
Of course, they're getting rid of
that. They did that at Theater Charlotte, so.
I
wouldn't be that eager.
That was before my time, okay. Since I've been back on the beat for 4 years, so I'm still a virgin and then I won't repeat the title. It's too long.
I guess they put a Tuna Christmas on the shelf over at Cast because nobody reviewed it last time they did it.
I don't review Christmas shows that have been done more than once.
Okay.
I just don't.
It's a different production. It's not the same movie.
No, but every time Wicked comes here, as it will again this year, I don't need to see if a reasonably competent Glinda is in it.
But didn't you and I talk about this at intermission the last time Wicked was here, that the Wicked that we were watching that night was very different from the Wicked that had – it was you and me, Perry. It was very different from the Wicked that had been here previously. It almost like they were commenting on themselves in the Wicked that came through the last time. Maybe it wasn't you and me.
Or
any of us.
It could have been your imaginary friend.
That's right. Could have been my imaginary friend.
But the thing is, there's nothing really to – I mean, if you want to see Wicked or Jersey Boys, there's very little that can be said to either convince someone to go who doesn't want to go or dissuade someone from going who does want to go. And that's really the job of a critic. It's not to just say this Glen is 60% as good as the last one, but Elphaba is 80% as good as the last one. That's dreary and tedious. Okay. The point is to say, here's an experience you may not have had. Think about having it. There's no one to say that to anymore for Wicked and Jersey Boys.
But also, if somebody has the impression, as you, Mike, did, that it's being done in a different fashion, then that's also something that the critic, you know, should point out so that other people can notice it and maybe learn about the difference or appreciate the difference.
Okay. Blessedly, I will never have to find out.
Well, I was going to make the segue to the dance theater, North Carolina Dance Theater, from the winter shows, the holiday show we were talking about. But we've moved on from that. But I'm still going to go back to that because they're doing the Nutcracker again. That's
of course.
For those people who only go to the dance theater to see the Nutcracker, what are they missing?
Oh, lots of other interesting kinds of things. And one thing that, you know, dance theater, being a fairly small company, they rarely do, you know, big Russian 19th century story ballets like Nutcracker. I mean, last year they did Sleeping Beauty, which was a stretch for them in a lot of ways. And it was interesting. But that's not their typical thing. So in some ways, just by the nature of their size, they're not able to address, you know, a big chunk of the repertoire of those big story ballets that we mainly only see from them in the form of Nutcracker, like, say, except for the occasional Sleeping Beauty. But so because of their size and because, obviously, of the background and interest of the directors, they're more oriented towards new things, modern things, which can be very impressive and striking and dramatic and exciting, but don't have the sort of built-in sales appeal of a Nutcracker. And so part of their job, in a way analogous to what Opera Carolina we were talking about before, is trying to get people interested in seeing new, unfamiliar, unexpected things and being open to that.
And the dance theater tends to do a lot of world premieres. They bring in choreographers from around the country.
Or their own choreographers, yes.
Their own choreographers. Jean-Pierre Bonfou has done some new choreographic works, among them, I believe, The Nutcracker, a new version of The Nutcracker. But they're going to do a show called Limitless, new works by Sasha Janes and Dwight Roden, who's been on this program before. Both known for challenging the dancers. And artistic director Jean-Pierre Bonfou has a work on that program as well.
Right. In that case, it's Viennese music of Mr. Bonfou, a piece that he's just changed the name of, and now so I now can't remember the new one.
Okay.
Back to your original question, I would be more blunt and just say that they're missing the best performing arts company in town, period. If they're the Nutcracker. They do have three core choreographers, Bonfou, Mark Diamond, and Dwight Roden, who are excellent, and they have a wonderful core of dancers. And when they lose three, they're constantly reloaded with other dancers who are just as good.
And this year they're having to reload with seven, so that's going to be a big undertaking for them, seven new dancers, basically nearly half the main company.
Yeah. And they are doing another work that would appeal to families, and that is Peter Pan.
Jean-Pierre
Bonfou's choreography for Peter Pan. Do we know anything about that? Has it been done before?
It was done at least right around the time I moved here. Like eight or 9 years ago they did it. I remember Yuri Sands was Captain Hook, if I remember right. And it involves, you know, obviously aerial work, flying, that kind of thing. So that's the kind of thing that maybe can bring in some of the
flying people.
Yeah.
Peter and Wendy, Michael and John, Tinkerbell, come on.
That's right.
Okay. All right, we have to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about the Broadway Light series, about the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra, Carolina's Actors Studio Theater, and anything else we can fit in the time allotted. Maybe Queen City or something. I don't know. We'll find out. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Culture and Heritage Museums, announcing the Saturday, October 13th opening of the new planetarium. Visitors can journey from the Carolina skies to the far reaches of the galaxy. Details at chmuseums.org. And the Swing Jazz Series with five-time Grammy Award-winning trumpeter Terrence Blanchard and the John Brown Big Band, Saturday, October 13th at McGlohan Theater in Spirit Square. Tickets at CarolinaTix.org. Omega-3 fish oil supplements are widely thought to help prevent a variety of ailments, including heart disease, Alzheimer's, and depression. But There is some question about that now. We seem to be going back and forth on these medical issues. Assessing the health benefits of an omega-3 rich diet, the topic in 20 minutes on The Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock. And we're coming right back to talk more about Charlotte's vibrant, growing, I hope, arts scene.
There's one issue that's dominated the race between President Barack Obama and Republican challenger Mitt Romney.
We don't build the economy from the top down. We build it from the bottom up.
Let's get America working again.
This evening, the candidates will debate the economy and other domestic issues. I'm Guy Raz. Join us for special coverage of the first presidential debate from NPR News.
Join us later tonight, starting at 9, at 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHG. I'm Mike Collins. Larry Topman is with us, and Stephen Brown from the Charlotte Observer, and Perry Tenenbaum from Creative Loafing. The Broadway Light series is kicking off shortly at the various theaters of the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center. They're bringing a lot of shows back. They're bringing Chicago back for three nights at the Night, which I think is a pretty good venue, or two nights at the Night, which is a pretty good venue, I think, for that show, because you don't need a great big theater to enjoy that show. I think the smaller the theater, the more you might enjoy it. Wicked at Ovens, The Lion King is coming back to the Belk. Are there people out there who still haven't seen Wicked? I mean, seriously.
A few of them may want to see it again.
And again.
And again.
And again. Well, they're also bringing back a show that was here a couple of years ago. This is a whole new mounting and new staging of this. The last time it was here, I thought it was just Jekyll and Hyde. But they're bringing it back this time with American Idol and Tony Award nominee Constantin Morales. He's the guy with all the hair. Remember, the guy with the long hair is the good guy, and the guy with the short hair is the bad guy. And Grammy Award-winning R&B singer Deborah Cox are both in the lead roles. What have we heard about this production?
It's been stripped down. It's not the production that was here the last time. Mm-hmm. There have been some musical revisions, I think not hugely significant, but from what I'm told, story revisions that make the plot flow more smoothly. I did not see the last one. In fact, I've not ever seen Jekyll and Hyde, so I have no comparative basis, but this is the scuttlebutt that I heard from the Blumenthal, that if you have seen it, you will not have seen this exact same show.
Well, good. That's a good thing. And Constantin, if that's how you say his name, Morales.
Constantine.
Constantine, but there's no E on it.
Marulis?
I don't know how you say his name.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I did.
You watched American Idol then?
No, I have the cast album.
Of American Idol? Oh, of this.
This.
Anyway, he was a Tony Award nominee.
I'm going to sing opera now unless you change the subject.
That's okay. But he was a Tony Award nominee for this show, was he not? On Broadway? Did he not do the show on Broadway for a moment? I mean, what else would he have done to be a Tony Award nominee?
Was it not Rock of Ages?
Was it Rock of Ages? Okay.
I'd have to look that up, but I didn't think it was for Jekyll and Hyde. This really is, I think, a different one from the one that appeared on Broadway about 10 years ago.
Okay, well, that's a good thing. Les Miserables has not been here in a while. I'm told this is also a newly mounted, somewhat rethought version of this with some changes. So do we know what to expect?
We can expect my wife Sue to drag me there.
I love Les Mis. I think Les Mis to me is like these operas that need to be seen every once in a while. Like every 3 or 4 years, you drag Les Mis out of the closet and you put it on the stage because it needs to be seen. Don't you think?
Penance or what?
No, because I think there are certain things that are extraordinary and that are classics and that really use the form well.
Okay.
And that we should see because it's part of the repertoire.
Well, you know, it depends on who the target audience is to. For Lion King, it's a family show.
Right.
So if you were 6 years old the last time it came, you might be too young to appreciate it. And if you're now 13 years old, it mm-hmm. might be ideal.
Right.
So that kind of a show will always have a recycling audience. Les Mis, which is aimed more at adults, and it's a wonderful show. Lord knows I've seen it many times. But at a certain point, I would have to see a director bring something really different to it. Simply mounting another very enjoyable Les Mis, like others I've seen, not enough for me to be excited
about.
It's
too bad you're not a tenor because you look like Jean Valjean. Fela is on the bill in February, and American Idiot is on the bill in March. Talk about these two shows because these are out of the box.
American Idiot rocks hard. Fela is more of an ethnic piece about Fela Kuti, a Nigerian artist. Mm-hmm. Neither one of these shows is very strong in terms of a book. So don't come to the theater in either case expecting to hear an extended story. I think American Idiot is stronger in that respect than Fela.
I think the crucial thing to think about with these shows is, and American Idiot will have a pre-sold audience because of Green Day, who wrote the music.
Right.
They're here very briefly. It's okay for Chicago to come around for two nights because it's been here multiple times, and that's really just saying anybody wants to see Chicago again, here's a couple days for you. But Fela has never been here, and it's here for only 2 days.
And is that because they could
only
get
Idiot
them?
American Idiot has never been here, and it's only here for 3 days.
Is that really? Because they can only get them for 2 or 3 days, or is that because they're afraid that they can't fill the theater for a full week?
It could be a combination of the two, and it also could be a question of availability.
Yeah.
I mean, a show like Fela may be touring. There's probably only one company out there. There's not multiples.
Right.
So it's, can we fit you in on the first go-round? The difficulty is there's no chance for word of mouth. If Fela is unbelievably good and we run back and blog about it that moment, the next day it's gone. So there's really no chance to build those
and
shows.
And both of those shows really would do better at the night theater.
They need word of mouth.
They need a smaller venue.
They're also doing – well, are they both at the Belk?
Yes, they are.
Yes.
They're also bringing a musical I think that's already closed on Broadway that was based on the Leonardo DiCaprio film. Catch Me If You Can. That'll be at the Belk for three nights in June.
Right.
And a lot of short-run stuff. But they're also bringing – this is the one I'm looking forward to. I'd like to hear your take on this. It's a non-musical. It's going to be in the Belk, which I think is the wrong theater for it. But nonetheless, it's going to be in the Belk in late May, early June, and that is War Horse.
I love the Lincoln Center production. And
which was the British
production.
I am
hoping that it will play nearly as well at the Belk.
Okay.
Because you had a nice surround atmosphere at Beaumont Theater up in New York.
Right.
And the puppetry is absolutely fabulous.
This is not the movie.
Not the movie
in any
all.
Way. And the puppetry, they brought the horse in for a preview for certain audiences, and I got that chance to MC it and talk to the horse. The horse doesn't talk, of course. But
an incredible experience just to watch
it's,
that.
It's amazing. The thing is a horse.
Yes.
It's a horse.
and I think it needs to be at the Belk, frankly, to accommodate audience demand.
Okay. That's
I mean, if you put it in the night and 10,000 people can see it, you put it in the Belk and 20,000 people can see it, I think you can sell those tickets.
Now, the Performing Arts Center also brings to town hundreds of things that people don't even hear about sometimes. We just did an underwriting credit a minute ago for Terrence Blanchard and the John Brown Big Band, which is coming October 13th to the McGlowan. Also in October at the McGlowan, the Indigo Girls, Janice Ian, Nick Lowe. And that's just a scattering of things that come here, Stephen, musically, particularly musically.
Oh, yes, there's lots of other kinds of things and other groups being presented or even another outfit that doesn't necessarily get mentioned on our annual installment very much is UNC Charlotte is bringing in the Martha Graham Dance Company.
Wow.
Which will perform at the Knight Theater, speaking of that. And they'll do what apparently is going to be the first Charlotte performance ever of Appalachian Spring.
Really? The first ever?
Yeah, as far as I can find. Amazing, though, that is at age 68 years or however long Appalachian Spring has been around. They could find no record of it having been done, and I actually even put an item in the paper one time asking if there was anybody here in town who ever remembered seeing it here, and I've not heard from anyone.
And when is that?
It's January or February. Suddenly let me look down here.
January 31st, I think. End of January, I believe?
January 18.
And
you would where would you look for that, on the UNC Charlotte calendar?
Yes, it is. Yes, on the UNC Charlotte website. And then you might be able to find it on Carolina Tix as well.
But
I
it will be at the Knight
Theater. It will be at the Knight Theater, that's right.
Okay.
And it will be with also a couple of things involving some UNC people as well.
Let's hopscotch quickly through some other things before we run out of time.
Jazz Theater, Jazz Series is worth mentioning because you're going to have John Faddis here and you're going to have Nina Freelon and Tia Fuller. So we are, after 25 years, getting some jazz, really meaty jazz to cover.
Because there have been people
here
who've been trying to bring jazz and meaty jazz to town for years and not being – I mean, I remember seeing Diane Krall when no one knew who Diane Krall was at the Mint Museum's little theater down on Randolph. and nobody was, I mean, it was filled, but, you know, it was filled because that was it, that we were the Diane Krall fans.
I saw John Faddis at Savannah Music Festival last spring, and he is an incredible trumpeter and entertainer, so you should catch him.
How's the Charlotte Symphony doing financially? They're looking for a new
executive director.
Executive director. So how are they doing?
Well, they're hanging in there, which is, you know, in some ways a progress for them to be able to hang in. I mean, they're all, you know, obviously still need to bring in more money, and they're always making fundraising appeals and reminding the audience about the importance of donations as well as ticket sales, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And that's a facet of, you know, we talk about the fact that, you know, Charlotte is a growing city, growing cultural community, but in some ways there's still a lot of establishing that still needs to be done for the cultural community in terms of building financial underpinnings for all these organizations, endowments, getting philanthropy built up in a way that it can support, you know, a professional orchestra can someday support professional theater again. Mm-hmm. And so there's still work to be done on that, and that's, you know, one of the big chores for the big task for Mr. Warren Green trying to build up the audience.
Because Jessica tweets that too many empty seats at the Charlotte Symphony for that much talent. Support your local arts. Look forward to Beethoven's Ninth, the symphony's closing show. Everybody must hear this live at least once in their life. I don't know why Beethoven never heard it. and she said it will be
her Well, we're luckier sixth, than he.
That's right. It'll be her sixth time to see it.
There you go.
Are there lots of empty seats?
Well, there were not so many at the opening 2 weeks ago. But it, you know, it depends on the program, obviously, as with theater, anything like that. But they also are working on building up their
modern audience. Music, and the people flee in droves.
Well, although they don't try that so much. But
they're doing a lot of different series over there. Different kinds of music and aimed at different kinds of people.
That's right.
But they're also doing modern music. Stravinsky, if it's still modern, I don't know. But Firebird,
your hope is not considered so modern anymore. I mean, right. even maybe for Charlotte.
But
I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, the Beckler Museum has been good to help drag Charlotte into the mid 1900s.
But they are holding an open rehearsal of Firebird, and they're doing this with several different works.
Right, and I think also they're going to they experimented this with this once last year, where they let people sit behind the orchestra on stage
you know,
the area where, if there were chorus, the oratorio singers mm-hmm. would be. And I think they're doing that again for this week's program as well. Just to give a different vantage point. You know, let people have a different experience, and, you know, find a different way of engaging with what's happening on stage.
Do you hear it as well as
actually you heard it? I the first time they did it, I sat up there, and you actually heard better than I thought in a more balanced way. It was not as skewed as you might think.
They have a lot of,
and so it comes off fine.
What of the on the classical music series? Mm-hmm. What are you most looking forward to?
Well, it's hard to say. Interestingly, it's something coming right up next week, Charlotte Concerts, the former Carolina's Concert Association, cranks up. They're having the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. A group from there, including, at least according to the Chamber Music website, Chamber Lincoln Center website, the group will include a pianist named Jeremy Denk, who is very good, mm-hmm. who's been here a few times. He played with Joshua Bell last time he was in town, mm-hmm. and is becoming very prominent for lots of things. I mean, as a soloist as well, and even as a blogger and writer. A few months ago, wrote a very interesting piece in The New Yorker about recording Charles Ives' Concord Sonata. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to be playing in that program next week. Which I just found out about the other day, that he was going to be involved in that. So that's certainly worthwhile. I'm looking forward to hearing a much complimented by Mr. Warren Green, the orchestra's new principal violist, who's going to play as a soloist in this. Excuse me? The Walton Concerto, viola concerto this springtime. Mr. Warren Green said it was one of the best orchestral auditions he's ever heard when this woman, Rebecca Newman is her name, when she auditioned.
And the pop series is, mm-hmm. they're doing everything from the music of the Bee Gees to the music of America, the group from the 1970s, are actually bringing to
the actual people in that case, yes.
Yeah. And Natalie Merchant will be on the pop series, among others, this year. So they do a lot of different things for a lot of different audiences, and I hope it's
that's
helping.
Right.
I hope it's helping them out.
Well, that's what they're working on.
I think we've gotten a little complacent about the Charlotte Symphony, but if you look around the country and around the world, a lot of symphony orchestras are going down the tubes.
Yeah.
So Charlotte Symphony, which used to be so weak in the past, is now becoming very strong, and for a good reason. They have really come up with a lot of innovative programming. And I think one of the things we overlook year after year, and we shouldn't overlook this year because it's moving to Night Theater, is their wonderful Lollipop series. The things that we do for our kids, in terms of the programming, in terms of the educational opportunities they have in the arts, is just outstanding. We can compare ourselves to any city in the country.
You have to stop talking about music, because otherwise you're going to leave Carolina's Actor Studio Theater on the floor, and I'm going to hear about that. We've already talked a little bit about their environmental nature, because it's an experience from the moment you walk in the lobby. This year they opened with Lombardi about the legendary football coach. Is that still running?
Actually, it was extended one weekend, which is very rare for them, and people could still see it this Friday and Saturday, I think.
A good show? Must be, if people are coming to see it.
Well, and it's a show that really the average theater goer can relate to in a way that he might not otherwise, because Lombardi is a recognizable figure, and football.
So it's maybe bringing in non-theater people because they are football people.
Perhaps new audiences, I would say.
Yeah. Up next is Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo. What do you know about this? Quickly, because we're really short.
This is something that Robin Williams starred in on Broadway, literally in the title role as a tiger who is killed by a U.S. Army soldier for good reason. He chewed off his hand and comes back to haunt him and other characters, and just goes through the Iraq War and the experience from obviously a very unique standpoint.
In November, they're doing a piece called 33 Variations, which sounds like a piece of music to me. Obviously, it's not. And then...
It is. It's the Beethoven's Diabelli
Variations.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's a play.
It's a play about somebody researching Beethoven.
Then they're doing three shows that have been done in Charlotte before. Frost Nixon and Proof, both have been done by the Performing Arts Center, and Proof has been done, I think, by Theater Charlotte in the past, and then Assassins, which has also
Proof
been
done
Proof
was the last play that Steve Umberger directed.
The Rep did it, too. And Assassins, which is a terrific Stephen Sondheim musical that should be seen.
And you should be in it again.
That's right. If I could just pull off 27. I can do that, can I?
Come on.
If you can do that, I am Ezio Pinza.
I'm sorry to say we left Queen City on the floor with On Cue Productions, and we didn't get a chance to talk about some of the things in outlying areas. We got an email from somebody who said that she loves the Storefront Theater in Waxhaw. That's Judy Simpson Cook's theater company out there. Larry Topman, Stephen Brown from The Observer, Perry Tannenbaum from Creative Loafing. Thanks.